to Fort McMurray Matters, keeping you connected to our community.
Brought to you by Fort McMurray Orthodontics and Cooper & Company Law Firm
on Mix 103.7.
Welcome to another edition of Fort McMurray Matters. Good afternoon, I'm Jaron Vecchio. And we have a packed show for you today as we're going to be learning more about federal supports for Indigenous groups. We're going to be discussing the rise in oil prices. But before we get into those topics, joining me over the phone right now is Tani Yao, MLA for Fort McMurray Wood Buffalo. So, Tani, I appreciate you taking a couple minutes. And we're hearing the news that Dr. Melanie Young is choosing to move her practice out of the province, citing concerns when it comes to measures that the provincial government is taking when it comes to, you know, the health sector. Just to start off with your overall thoughts here in that.
It's always disappointing when a physician chooses to leave our community. It's a regular process up here, unfortunately. But thankfully, our community is usually quite successful in attracting new talent every year. So, you know, as McMurrayites know, in every sector in our community, we have a regular turnover of staff, and this is no different.
Is there any concern that they are citing, you know, measures that your province or your government is taking?
I would question their personal opinion, but that might be their perspective. I believe some of the physicians that might be ordinarily leaving us anyways might be using this to give their coworkers some leverage here in the negotiations with the province. But people have to remember that the physicians here are still the highest paid in the nation. And they are very generously compensated here in Alberta, even with the perceived cuts that have happened to them.
Mm-hmm. You kind of touched on it earlier that, yes, the community does see a lot of turnover when it comes to doctors. Losing one more, is this going to be, you know, should the community be worried? Are you concerned that we're going to be one doctor short, or are you confident that we'll be able to maybe fill that position rather quick and maybe add more doctors?
My understanding is Alberta Health Services is continually recruiting physicians to come to our province and to our community, and they already have some people that are anticipating on coming up to Fort McMurray.
All right. Well, Tani, is there anything else you'd like to add? Maybe we didn't have a chance to chat about.
No, I think that's it. You know, our physicians should be aware in town here that myself and MLA Layla Goodridge are here to represent our community and make sure that their concerns are brought to the provincial government. And I can assure our community that over the last months, I've been in discussions with the physicians, with our primary care network, with our hospital representatives, as well as representatives from Alberta Health Services.
Once again, that was Tani Yao, MLA for Fort McMurray Wood Buffalo, talking about Dr. Melanie Young, who has chosen to move her practice out of the province. We're going to take our first break here on Fort McMurray Matters, but don't go anywhere, as coming up after the break, we're going to be talking about the rise in oil prices.
We'll return in a moment to Fort McMurray Matters.
Brought to you by Fort McMurray Orthodontics and Cooper & Company Law Firm.
On Mix 103.7. We're back to Fort McMurray Matters.
Brought to you by Fort McMurray Orthodontics and Cooper & Company Law Firm.
On Mix 103.7.
Welcome back to Fort McMurray Matters. Once again, I'm Jaron Vecchio. And if you're just tuning into the show right now, before the break, we had a chance to chat with Tani Yao, MLA, for Fort McMurray Wood Buffalo, about a local doctor who is choosing to move her practice out of the province. Now joining me over the phone is Tim Pickering, CIO of Auspice Capital. First off, Tim, I appreciate you taking a couple minutes, and some positive news in the oil sector, as over the last couple of weeks, we've been seeing oil prices rise steadily. WTI crude has been hovering in the low $30 range. The Western Canadian Select has been, as of this morning, was just under $30. Maybe just to start off with the main reason why we've been seeing such a big rise in prices after that historic fall just a few weeks ago.
Well, I'd say the headline reason is that we've seen some storage withdrawals in the U.S. for crude stocks. So I think that sort of grabbed people's attention. And you're right, we've bounced back from the, you know, the lows we had in March and April, and it's been rising steadily and has made its way back up into, you know, almost the mid-30s for the July contract. So there, you know, there's some reason for that, given we have seen some storage draws. But what I would say to listeners is to be very cautious here, and there's a number of reasons. The level it's at is quite interesting and even a little bit concerning, because it has especially U.S. producers looking at bringing production back. It's, you know, it's getting to that economic level. And the big concern with that is, you know, beyond this, these weekly storage withdrawals, when we look overall, and that's just crude oil, when we look at all the products, refinery usage, all the different types of petroleum, storage is still brimming. There is a massive amount of storage, and on a net basis, it's still a building inventory situation. So part of what people have been talking about is the prices come up because the market is rebalancing. I would be very cautious with that thought process. It's not that I want to be pessimistic. I would love to be optimistic, but the market is not balanced. We have a large amount of producers in North America have shut in production. Let's say 10 to 20% of the continent's production has been shut in. Yet when we look at the demand destruction, it's still down, you know, 25 to 35%. That may be stabilizing, but we still have way too much production and crude oil in inventory versus the demand. The fundamentals still tell us that this is an oversupplied market. So I would be very cautious. This move has been significant. It's come a long way. I don't think we're going to see north of $40 oil unless something significant changes. And given the amount of inventory, it's hard to imagine what that would be. So I'm telling listeners, please be cautious with this.
Mm-hmm. And maybe just to put into, I guess, layman's terms here, in sure. Just now that production may be increasing, and this could be bad as we don't have as much demand, and right. Storage is also running out. Is that correct?
Right. Yeah. That's correct.
All right. And you mentioned that you don't think we're going to be seeing, you know, peak of $40 unless something, you know, drastic happens. What do you think that drastic thing could be?
Well, I mean, it's look, we you know, us Albertans, and especially the great people of Fort McMurray, know there's surprises around the corner, and it's hard to even get your mind around them. It's hard for me to imagine a scenario. It could take Middle East conflict. It could take Saudi Arabia deciding that they're going to shut in a massive amount of production, and the U.S. going along with that. But those seem like such unlikely events at this time. Saudi has taken production off. The U.S. has dropped production voluntarily from approximately 13 million barrels a day to 11-ish. Significant amount of production is off in Canada. But we still have, like, storage is absolutely brimming on a North American basis. So it's going to be very hard until, and this is the key factor, until we see transportation really pick up. Right from CAP, from the Canadian Association, they state that 65% of oil is used in transportation, so gasoline, jet fuel, and diesel. And remember, the amount of transportation usage is still down dramatically. Until that comes back and we see planes in the air, you know, it's going to be an oversupplied market. And so this is going to take a bit of time to work through.
Mm-hmm. We've been hearing, you know, different timelines about when, you know, we can go back to some source of normalcy. Obviously, yep. It's going to be a long time until we can, you know, feel like it was before the pandemic. But the one timeline we've been hearing is, you know, around a year, over a year. Is that the timeline you've been hearing, or maybe shorter, maybe longer?
You know, the timelines that I have in mind is that we start to see much more airline traffic towards the end of this year. I think you can do a simple test. Anybody can, and ask yourself, you know, if you were given the opportunity to go on a vacation in in Hawaii or pick a place, Mexico, you know, are you comfortable getting on a plane? And when most people start answering that, yep, I'm 100% comfortable, ready to go, then you know, I think that can be an indicator. But I think a lot of people, at least what I'm hearing from people, is they're not quite comfortable yet, and they don't know when that'll be. I think we have to think about when the kids go back to school in September. Is that going to happen? How normal is that? And once we hit September, I think we will we'll have a lot more indicators of that level of normalcy, and it'll really be driven by you know, is transportation picking up, or kids back to school, or people doing normal things, because we're still nowhere near that.
Mm-hmm. And I'm curious as well, with prices like this and, you know, production potentially on the rise, especially in the United States,
yep,
if we start seeing, you know, storage units getting to the point where they can't take any more barrels, is it likely that we could potentially see prices drop down again?
I think you have to have that in mind. It's like, you know, play you know, your thought process in terms of what's the worst case scenario. I think the downside risk right now is much greater than the potential for a big upside move. I can only plainly state that there is big downside risk, and that is because storage is so full. In the U.S., they have a little bit of an edge, and that is this, what they call the SPR, the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. And that's the government reserves. So barrels can go into the Strategic Petroleum Reserve that's controlled by the federal government. We do not have that ability in Canada. And so, you know, when we're full, we're full, and you have to get pretty darn creative. And we've seen some of that creativity with Enbridge offering up excess downstream pipeline capacity as temporary storage. But we don't have an SPR option like the U.S. So, you know, it definitely puts Canadian production on its heels, and I'm concerned about that downside risk.
Mm-hmm. Well, Tim, before I let you go, just one last topic I was hoping to chat with you about. And
sure,
one thing we've talked on this show many times before is pipelines. And the one,
yes,
pipeline that's in the news of right now is Keystone. We know that the Alberta,
right,
government has invested quite a lot of money into it. We've been hearing concerns coming from the states, especially with Joe Biden's party. Should people be concerned that this project may not be going forward?
I'm trying to be very cautious and temper my enthusiasm. I'm confident that the Keystone XL pipeline will go forward. I'm also fairly confident that Mr. Biden won't be successful in his run for presidency. That said, there's a lot of factors right now. We're in a different world, and I kind of play it like anything could happen. I feel fairly confident that Keystone is going to happen, and the core reason to that, beyond the politics that Mr. Biden is using, is that the U.S. really needs Canadian oil. Our oil creates energy security. Remember, our heavy oil is something they don't have. They have lots of oil. They have light sweet. We have heavy oil, and they need that heavy oil. And so it makes Keystone XL an importantly critical piece of infrastructure, not for just Canadians, but for the U.S.
And it's safe to say these pipeline projects, they're the ones that are going to really help, you know, get us back to that sense of normalcy in the years to come.
Well, there's jobs. The amount of jobs created out of Keystone XL, the last numbers I heard were over 10,000. So we're talking about a very important piece of infrastructure, as is Trans Mountain. So this, you're right, this is one of the things that will get us back to normalcy. It gets Albertans back to work.
All right, well, Tim, that's pretty much all the questions I have, but is there anything else you'd like to add? Maybe we didn't
nope.
have a chance to chat about.
Nope, we're good, Darren. Call anytime. Happy to chat.
Once again, that was Tim Pickering, CIO of Auspice Capital, talking about the rise in oil prices and how oil companies should be cautious right now. We're going to take our last break here on Fort McMurray Matters, but don't go anywhere, as coming up after the break, we're going to be learning more about federal supports for Indigenous groups.
We'll return in a moment to Fort McMurray Matters.
Brought to you by Fort McMurray Orthodontics and Cooper and Company Law Firm.
On Mix 103.7. We're back to Fort McMurray Matters.
Brought to you by Fort McMurray Orthodontics and Cooper and Company Law Firm.
On Mix 103.7.
Welcome back to Fort McMurray Matters. Once again, I'm Jaron Vecchio. And if you're just tuning into the show right now before the break, we had a chance to talk to Tim Pickering, CIO of Auspice Capital, as we chatted about the rise in oil prices and how oil companies should be cautious right now. Now we're going to be hearing from Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, who announced new supports for Indigenous groups earlier this morning.
Since day one, our government has been engaging with First Nations, Inuit, and Métis Nation leaders in the fight against this virus. We've been listening to people's concerns and working with local leadership to ensure that communities are getting the right support. And so far, we've taken a number of important steps. We're investing in emergency shelters to help Indigenous women and children fleeing violence. We're offering interest-free loans and non-repayable contributions to help Indigenous businesses weather this storm. We're helping First Nations, Inuit, and Métis Nation students and recent grads find a job this summer. And last week, we announced more funding to support the most urgent needs of Indigenous communities dealing with the COVID-19 outbreak. While all communities have had to wrestle with COVID-19 these past few months, the everyday realities of this crisis are different for everyone. To mount an effective response to this crisis, we must adapt our approach and our programs to recognize and meet the particular needs of all Indigenous peoples, including those living in urban areas and off-reserve. To this end, we announced $15 million back in March to support Indigenous organizations that deliver services to these populations as part of the Indigenous Community Support Fund we had set up to help prevent and mitigate the impact of this virus. With this money, organizations have been able to give meals, groceries, clothing, and supplies to those in need and offer mental health counseling. They've also provided personal protective equipment and cleaning supplies for supportive housing and computer and laptops so kids can keep up with their schoolwork. This funding is helping vulnerable people like youth, women, and elders. Indigenous community organizations in our cities and off-reserve do crucial work year-round, but these days their services are in high demand because of the pandemic. We need to make sure they have the resources to adapt and grow their services so they can fulfill their important mission. So today, our government is announcing an additional $75 million in new funding for organizations that address the critical needs of the over a million Indigenous people living in urban centers and off-reserve. This is critical work. If you live off-reserve or in a city, we're working to make sure you don't fall through the cracks. You need and deserve services that are culturally appropriate, and that's what we're doing with today's investment.
Once again, that was Prime Minister Justin Trudeau talking about additional supports for Indigenous groups. So if you're looking for more information about this, make sure you head to the Mix News page. Now, that's all the time we have for today on Fort McMurray Matters, but make sure to tune into Mix 103.7 every weekday at noon to hear the interviews that matter to you and your community. Once again, I'm Jaron Vecchio, and this has been Fort McMurray Matters.
That's the end of another edition of Fort McMurray Matters.
Want a copy of this episode or any past episode?
Download the podcast at mix1037fm.com.